Welcome to Big Broadway Energy, the podcast with your host, Stephen Reardon. That's me. Thank you for being here, podcast listener. That is you. Speaking of me, is it just me or is there a new theater popping up everywhere? When I was a kid and would come to downtown St. Pete to see shows at American Stage in the old building or at Demen's Landing for the Park Show, it was really the only game in town, unless you wanted to go to the Straz and see Phantom of the Opera again. And I remember thinking to myself, I wish there were more plays to see. Well, wish granted. Officially, we are beyond blessed with this incredible, insightful, beautiful, challenging theater everywhere we look in Tampa Bay. And one such play that is coming to downtown St. Pete is a play called The Cadillac Crew, and it's opening at the Studio at 620 on November the 6th. Today we have the director and assistant director of The Cadillac Crew, not to mention the two brilliant humans that basically run the Studio at 620, with us today to talk everything studio and Cadillac Crew, Erica Sutherland and Alexa Perez. Welcome to Big Broadway Energy, friends.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
It's nice to see you both. I want to talk all about the studio and our partnership a little later and all the things that you're doing this season, which is pretty significant and amazing. But first, let's focus on the Cadillac Crew. This is such a special and important play, and your production is the first time it's being seen in Tampa Bay. So let's start with just a brief synopsis of the play, because I think it's just one of those pieces that's so necessary and timely and important.
Absolutely. So in a nutshell, or just a little small byline or snippet, this play deals with four women, four African-American women during the civil rights movement. And what it speaks to thematically are the conversations and stories and understanding that behind the movement, even though you had the Dr. Kings out in front, it was women that really pushed the movement forward. And we don't celebrate those names. We don't know those names. So the story speaks to not only the celebration of women behind the movement, and we're talking civil rights, human rights, women's rights. We're also talking about the erasure of women in history and how, again, we no longer know who they are, what they did, the significant role that they played in whatever was being created.
I think that's perfect synopsis of you know, really what the play is about and how important it is and why it exists. And I think, you know, you mentioned Dr. King. It's sad and embarrassing that the majority of the people that understand or have heard the civil rights movement, quote unquote, is they hear about Dr. King and they hear about Rosa Parks and they think those things were sort of done on the fly. And this play discusses how, in fact, it wasn't done on the fly. In fact, there was so much sort of planning that went into what we were going to experience with the civil rights movement in this country. Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, we don't want to give the play away, obviously, and that's a very long conversation to have in 18 minutes, but I want to talk a little bit about why that's important, because I just, when I dive into that stuff, I am frankly, and I saw the Mountaintop, the American Stage did last season, mm-hmm. I am really embarrassed by my white privilege and the misunderstanding of what the civil rights movement was about and why it occurred and how long it took for it to occur. I know that's a big question.
I got you. First, I want to say, you know, we can stop being embarrassed about our white privilege. I think we shouldn't be embarrassed about it. I think what we need to do is celebrate privilege as a whole. Mm-hmm. So yeah. We don't have to be embarrassed. So we can stop using that terminology. I would love that in a world so that we can use more inclusive language because no one is trying to take that away from anyone. We all want to participate. But thank you for bringing that up. Because, you know, we're talking about a movement and not just the civil rights movement, but any movement that has occurred on this planet did not come out of a vacuum. It was designed. It was talked about. There were campaigns built. It was, you know, there were meetings. There is a systematic structure around what a movement looks like and how a movement should move. Dealing with the civil rights movement or dealing with this year, 1963, and our story takes place in 1963 in Virginia. Looking inside that world, you know, we discuss how the movement was planned or what happened or what needed without giving away the story of certain characters and like, you know, why was Rosa Parks important? Mm. Who came before her? Because there were
Without a doubt.
That really, really kicked off or created some important moments in history.
Yeah. One of them is discussed in the show.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But why they chose Rosa is a reason mm-hmm. why, you know, there's a reason around that.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
And it has to do with a lot about how cultures and communities are perceived. Now, remember that we're in the 60s. So in order for us to be perceived in a certain way, taken, you know, so for someone to say, oh, this is a legitimate movement, even though women are the people that are backing and creating and developing and pushing the movement forward, well, we most definitely have men that are leading it, right? We have men that are the figures, the figureheads that the people respond to. You know, Dr. King was very charismatic, brilliant and charismatic. But there are women that are just as brilliant and just as charismatic. But we are talking about a time and an era where women had a place. And I'm not saying that that place has been erased in today's time. And so I think that's important for us to understand, is that there is not one single movement, black, white, indifferent, in between, around the world, that did not have some type of structure behind it, that there was no thought put into it to execute it. Yeah. What do you want to say?
Alexa, I wanted to ask you, like, what was special about this play that spoke to you? I know that you do a lot of this community work as well, especially as a director. You just finished a really beautiful play in Tampa. What spoke to you about this play and made you want to be assistant director?
Well, so first of all, I always get excited about the opportunity to assistant direct for Erica. I've assistant directed for her on multiple productions now. I think this is our third together. And I learn something new every time from her, so I'm always excited to just kind of absorb her brilliance. But for me, one of the things that really resonated with me about this play in particular is that there is a character in it named Sarah who is defined as white passing in her story. She is half white, half black, right? And she has to figure out how to move through the world during this time in this movement, wanting to help, but also recognizing that she doesn't have the same experiences as she does with everyone around her, but also having her own kind of moment of isolation because she's not enough of one thing or another, it seems like, at certain times. And for me, I'm Puerto Rican and Cuban, and in the Latin diaspora, we experience a lot of that sometimes, especially for Latinas that grow up in the States, right, who are not super ingrained in the culture. Maybe they don't speak Spanish, whatever it is, right, things within that world. And so this character, Sarah, she's marrying a white man. She's like moving up in the world in that way. And so it was interesting to me that it was looking at the civil rights movement on that spectrum, like on the spectrum of color, and talking about color and colorism and like all of those things within that community, because that was a very real conversation as well. And it was also, again, rubbing it back to Rosa Parks. Like, I'm not going to give anything away, but it is one of the reasons why she was a person that was chosen as a figure, a prominent figure in the movement. So, yeah.
It's fascinating. And that is a discussion and a thing that I think a lot of people of color are still obviously struggling with. I know of people in the black community who have told me stories of when they were growing up, they weren't black enough, even though they had a black mother and a black father, because they weren't dark skinned enough. We take for granted sometimes as it being a very one topic movement. And in reality, it's not. And that kind of brings me to, you know,
before you jump into that, the next statement,
sure,
I'd love to just have a moment and talk about this character, Sarah, that yes, she does speak for that, but also she speaks for in relationship to the movement and her family and her side of the family being on white passing, and the work that our white sisters, our white counterparts, female counterparts helped us do, right, in the movement, and also living a life as white passing and the dangers in that too, because that is just as dangerous just as being brown during the time of the civil rights movement. And so her character has so many levels, just like everyone else, of how does she show up and advocate as a woman that is considered white, who is black but living a white passing life, and that she has married into and is married into a white family, right? And the danger surrounding by that, her showing up, her grandmother being an advocate of the movement of human rights, being another woman that was white passing, right? So how is she showing up in the work that has to be done, and how she uses her voice to keep people safe, you know, when they are, because the story is about Cadillac Cruz, right? And that is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And most people have never heard of Cadillac Cruz. And so how did her voice help keep, and voices like hers, help keep women safe as they were traveling through the South trying to desegregate?
Right. And also how that voice adjusts day to day depending on who she's talking to.
Correct.
Because white passing means passing, right? That doesn't mean that everyone is going to view the, or perceive this person as white, like depending on who she's talking to or where she is, it could be a completely different experience. And so she's taking a risk and a chance every time that she's doing this work. And it's important.
Let's talk about the Cadillac Crew. Can we give a brief definition of sort of what that was in history and why it was important?
Absolutely. You want me to take that one?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Cadillac Crew is basically women got together. So it would be two black women and two white women, and they would get together. They would be in their Sunday best. Everybody knows that dress, like, and they would get into cars, and Cadillacs became the symbol of that because Cadillacs were considered the luxury car of that era and things of that nature. And these women would get into a car, two black, two white, and drive through the South. And they would ride together, and then they would do their work separately. They would do their work separately at first, where the black women would go and talk to the women in the community, and the white women would go and talk to the white women in the community. Because what they found, and when I say they, I'm speaking of Dr. Dorothy Height and Polly Cohen, which were the founders of, Polly Cohen is a white woman, which were the founders of the Cadillac movement, or on Wednesdays in Mississippi, I think that's WIMS. And don't correct me if I am wrong about them being founders of WIMS, but I do know that they created and instituted the Cadillac movement. And what they realized is that we all wanted the same thing, and that they could use soft power, right? Soft power, because if soft power could get together and understand that we all wanted the same thing and we could work together to desegregate the ideology around segregation, right? To break that down, then we could start to, as I say, create a community that we want to live in. So these women were very brave to drive around. And in our show, it speaks specifically to Tallahassee, to Florida. And a lot of their work happened in Florida. And so this is just as dangerous. It's just like the Freedom Riders, like riding and desegregating using that method. And so it's the same method, just a little smaller. I mean, going into the communities, but not a lot of people knew about this and about these women. These are women getting into a car. It's not a man riding with them in the southern states.
It reminds me a lot of suffrage. You know, the suffrage movement was similar in that there were a lot of white women leading the cause, but there were people from all over the world, women who wanted to be part of that cause, and their passion for it gave such voice to a group of women that would not have even been represented.
Yeah, and what's also interesting is the suffrage movement, you know, you said that it was white women leading that cause, but actually it was both. It was black and white women leading that cause.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that just brings up another story that we need to talk about, right?
Yeah.
There needs to be another play wrapped around the conversations and the work and the hurt and the pain points that exist in the women's movement, the women's rights movement between black women and white women, right? That's something different.
I guess that's what I meant, is that the white women were respected in the suffrage movement as the leaders because back then there was this ideology of like black women wouldn't be able to, because they, for whatever prejudice there was around that, it was like these brilliant humans weren't even being listened to that were leading the cause because of the color of their skin. We all know that that is the sad history of our country, and it's so exciting that we are having these conversations and hopefully reminding ourselves that it's not gone. It's still happening. And that's why it's such a topical show to put on right now. I mean, the things that we are experiencing today are just reminders that this is such an important thing, and these prejudices and these feelings run deep, and they run unfortunately, to the first days of our country, yeah?
I think that this is just a complex situation in our history. And history, period, is complex.
Mm, amen.
Right? We can look at something and try to have a singular view, but until you start to understand all the different facets. And that is not Erica speaking against the fact that segregation and racism existed. It did. It was horrible. All the things are horrible. But I'm looking at our history, and I think that if we can't just speak to our history, whether sad or good, but it's our history. We just need to speak to that so that we can move forward. We can acknowledge it and move forward. And it doesn't have to exist in one world or the other. It can be.
Mm.
And then we can create what we want to be now.
I love that. And that's what you're actually doing with the full exhibition. Let's talk a little bit about the conversations, the film screenings, the visual art exhibition of The Unseen Thread, Women, Art, as Movement. All designed to deepen the dialogue and honor women whose work has shaped the change, right? And that is the full exhibition that's happening at the studio. Let's talk a little bit about what people will experience in addition to the Cadillac Crew if they want to come in and see this exhibition as a whole.
Yeah, so we had a partnership with Tampa Bay Arts Passport, and we had a film screening of Hidden Figures at Greenlight Cinema, and we had a really great discussion around the film and around the themes of Cadillac Crew after the show. It was great. We had a really good group come.
I love that. Yeah. It's a great movie. If you've never seen Hidden Figures, it's really a great example of what we're talking about today, right?
Absolutely. And then from there, we had a couple of other community engagement opportunities. J.K.N. Jones did a presentation of Women of the Movement, so an even broader perspective of women and how they showed up and actually just created the movement, right, and kept the movement going and things of that nature and the things that the organizations that they founded. So that was another opportunity. And then one of the big things that we were doing is we do have an exhibition opening Thursday, October the 30th at 6 p.m. And that is The Unseen Thread, where we did a invite to artists, to female artists, to submit or create work that was in line with the themes of the show. And also, we are not using, like, the pieces will be a part of the production, right? I'm not designing the show or directing the show where the artwork just exists on the walls and you see a pretty piece of art. It's a part of
it. Part of the show.
I don't want to ignore it.
Amazing.
It's a part of it. And the themes and the work that's represented speaks to all the things that we are discussing inside the world of the play. I also find that it's beautiful because, like I said, this is a collection of women across all cultures, across all colors, coming together for an exhibition. And so it's really interesting how they chose to show their artwork and what themes they chose to use and what was important to them, either from a feminine perspective or cultural perspective. And so it's a beautiful show. Again, it's going to be Thursday, October the 30th at the studio at 6:20. We open at 6 p.m.
I love that. I love that. And this whole production of Cadillac Crew is being produced in partnership with Power Stories. And this is a collaboration that I know is really special to the studio. And if our listeners aren't aware of Power Stories, Alexa, can you tell us a little bit about what Power Stories does, what they're about?
Yeah, so Power Stories Theater is a company that is located in Tampa. And their main mission is to tell stories that are about women and are either based on historical events or figures that existed or are true stories, right? And so Cadillac Crew kind of fit right into their wheelhouse and what they're all about in terms of storytelling. And for them, I know this production is actually the end of their 25th season.
It is,
right?
Yes.
And it's the first show of our season at the studio. And so it was kind of like this really beautiful bookend,
passing the baton.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it was cool to be able to come together with them and pool our resources to just lift that story up.
I know a little bit about the collaborative spirit of the studio at 6:20 because obviously Dead Canary Theater, which is one of my initiatives, is one of the companies in residence at the studio. Without the partnership of the studio at 6:20, we wouldn't be producing theater, Dead Canary. So if you don't hear it enough, Erica and Alexa, thank you for opening your doors and giving me a place to create art. And I think, you know, whenever there's new leadership at places like the studio, there's always questions of like what it's going to be like. And I can tell you from working with Bob and the past leadership at the studio and now working with Erica and Alexa, the welcome is the same. The passion is the same. The love that you get when you walk in the door is the same. So I know that Power Stories must be having, I hope they're having the same experience that I have every time I collaborate with you guys.
Oh, they're some of my favorite people to work with. So yeah. And first of all, thank you for those words. Thank you. And you are, I mean, I love having your company as a resident company at the studio. And it really helps us not only to diversify what we bring to the table, because you're talking to two people who help, like, I run the whole thing. Alexa is the reason why you all are following and knowing what's happening in the world. And that's a lot. So yeah. When you have partnerships, it makes the lift easier, right? It's not so heavy. And your partnership and then Power Stories partnership is really, really essential to the forward motion at the studio. Yes, the studio is now creating more of its own content, but our belief is, our mission is that we do this together, right? We live together. And how do we do that? And what are the different blueprints of doing that? And what is the newness that comes with doing that? And working with Power Stories, I've been, because Claire Ann Despain is one of my dear friends, but also a brilliant creative mind. We've had numerous conversations about how do you live together? What does that really look like? How do you both take or deal with the financial burden so that it's not so much a burden that we can have success in that? What does success look like? How do you work with people? I mean, there's so many different, I have a lot of different blueprints that Claire Ann and I are working on together, you know, in different models inside of the studio and inside of Power Stories, and seeing like, okay, this is how you make this partnership work. What does a cost share look like? How do we do those things? And so I really love to have an organization that's willing to walk with me, I like to say, through the darkness of the unknown while we figure out and bring light to whatever the blueprint is.
Yeah. And just so for people that don't know, Claire Ann Despain is the artistic director of Power Stories Theater, and yeah. She's a fantastic collaborator.
Another brilliant human that's creating art all over Tampa Bay.
Yes.
And as we step into the uncertainty of the future of the arts, I mean, those are the kinds of things that are more important now than ever, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there is, you know, and everybody knows, there's no secret. We haven't received funding from the state. We will be going into our third year, and that's okay. Erica and the studio cannot sit in that, right?
No.
It happened. I know it. I don't even expect it. So I'm not waiting for it to come back. So how do I show up? Mm-hmm. How does the organization show up? How does the community show up to support the organization so the organization can continue to show up for the community? And that's where the new blueprint exists, right? Grants, they're lovely, but we all know that they're drying up. Not only are they drying up, more people have created nonprofits, which means that the dollars that we do have are bifurcated even more.
Even more, mm-hmm. Sure.
So now we're back to the individual. Mm. How does the community show up for an organization, for a nonprofit? Well, how do we do that? What does that look like? And it feels very overwhelming. And I like to break it down to people that it doesn't have to be. One thing, you buy tickets, you buy a membership. You can do this. You can go, hey, I'm going to donate to your organization for 4 months this year, and then I'm going to turn that donation to another nonprofit. And then you rotate like that. And if I know that between January and March, you're going to give me money, then that's something like, it's better than nothing. So how are we showing up for each other? Because the only way that the studio can show up and keep its doors open is by private donors, corporate donors and sponsors, and the community.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's what it's for, right? Without a doubt. I know we're running late. I wanted to just give you both an opportunity to answer this question. Erica, you may have already just answered it. What art means to you? And Alexa, why don't you start? What comes to mind when I ask that question to you?
I think that art means being able to offer a space and a place for people to creatively and curiously approach expressing themselves mm-hmm. without judgment. And yeah, I think that's the best way I can encapsulate concisely.
It's true.
Yeah.
Erica?
Sweet. So art to me, and I think I'm in the same vibe as Alexa, so, but art to me is the creation of something out of nothing.
Yeah. Mm.
right? So we are all artists in some way, shape, fashion, or form. Some of us have just done it professionally and understand it, but creating something out of nothing, but understanding that that creation takes all of us.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And again, if you haven't seen the studio in a while, please go stop by. Cadillac Crew opens November 6th at the studio at 620 for 2 weekends only. All info on times, tickets, etc. can be found at the studio at 620. So that's the studio at the number 620.org. But if you want to experience the full breadth of the project, I suggest you drop by the studio beginning on October 30th for the Unseen Thread art exhibit, which will be on display through November the 29th. The studio is conveniently located at 620 First Avenue South in downtown St. Pete. Erica, Alexa, thank you for joining us today. I can't wait to see Cadillac Crew and experience the Unseen Thread. Thank you for everything you do for the community, because you're right, the arts is the community. Without us, we can't do either one without the other.
No, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
So good to see you both. If you or someone you know would be a good guest on my podcast, please email me, will you? At bigbroadwayenergy@gmail.com. Until next time, friends, be kind, be curious, keep creating. Bye, everybody.